We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Kansas State is taking on TCU this weekend for the Big 12 Championship, and it has playoff implications. The Kansas City Chiefs take on the Cincinnati Bengals in a rematch of last year, and the transfer portal is opening very, very soon. I have everything you need to know right here on the Best Rhythm, presented by Charlie Hustle.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What's up, guys? This is the Best Rhythm presented by Charlie Hustle. I am your host, Michaela Bennett, and normally I start with the Chiefs on this show, but this week we are actually down in Arlington, Texas for the Big 12 Championship, TCU versus K-State. All the guys from the 3 Mile Podcast are down there for the game, hanging out, doing live shows, everything that they would ever need at K-State. Fans, check them out. If you're down there, link up with them, whatever you need to do. But on 3 Mile this week, they talked about just that. They talked about the game this week and how it has playoff implications, how this is a prime game. It is kickoff, 11 a.m. It is, you know, big television, national news, and K-State has a really good chance to make an upset, to climb the top 10. You know, they already broke in top 10 in college football playoff rankings, but maybe they can keep climbing. This is a big game for the Wildcats, and taking on TCU, they could potentially just spoil their season.
All the national spotlight flowing in, flooding down on the Cats right now. Top 10 in the college football playoff poll. College game day is going to be at the Big 12 championship game on Saturday. Paul Feinbaum appears to have been muted by his bosses, coming with a very meek apology for his comment that nobody would be watching the Big 12 championship game, which will have ESPN's number one crew, Fowler and Herb Street, along with Holly Rowe doing the game. It's the only top 10 matchup of the day. Now sounds like the Sugar Bowl really is a certainty. I mean, Derek, where do I even start here? Where do we start on all the love that's coming in for the Cats right now?
Well, I will start by saying it's kind of been a little consistent throughout the year for K-State specifically. I mean, this is what, the third week in a row, they're the highest ranked three-loss team in America, the only three-loss team in the top 10. And I know a lot of the metrics do back it up, but it is interesting that of all the teams with, you know, three losses, everyone that follows college football, that ranks college football, that covers college football, says Kansas State's easily the best one. I agree. I guess I just didn't – I didn't expect it to be a consensus. I thought, you know, they would usually get the normal disrespect because of the lack of name that they bring to the table, or maybe, you know, punch in terms of audience that they bring to the table. But they've gotten a lot of respect throughout the year. So Kansas State fans can't really – complain about the lack of respect Kansas State's received this year.
Can find ways to complain.
In ways, they probably, you know, gotten more than they deserved at times. Now they're getting exactly what they deserve, and it's a good thing. But I'll also say, coinciding with that, it's just a big spotlight on the Big 12 the last couple of weeks. I think people have really taken notice how competitive the league was, how exceptional the league was throughout the, and how it could be even without Texas and Oklahoma. It's the second year in a row without either one being in the Big 12 championship game. it's always been known to be a basketball league, but it's, you know, there's a reason why College Game Day picked the Big 12 championship to go to when it could have went to anything, you know, probably aside from the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, the committee obviously really respects K-State. They've respected them all year. I thought they would come in at number nine. I'm surprised that Clemson only dropped one spot. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me because Clemson doesn't have really any good wins. And they dropped one spot for losing to South Carolina at Clemson on their home field, while Oregon on the road at Oregon State dropped seven spots, losing to a team the committee ranked 15th in Oregon State. So that doesn't make any sense to me, but I mean, I digress. So you can't really complain much. I mean, the committee has shown a lot of love and respect to K-State, so I don't have any issues there.
Yeah, I tell you what, if you were going to argue against Kent State being in the top 10, I know we don't want to do that, but technically they haven't beat a team ranked in the top 25.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you do look at K-State's resume. That, you know, it's a bunch of 7 or 6 win teams, right, that they've defeated. They haven't beat anybody with 8 wins or more on the season. Now, they played a tough schedule, Tulane, largely because of that. But it's a good point. I mean, they don't have that necessarily resume win that really sticks out on your profile. So I've avoided calling that out all year because we don't want to harp on any sort of negative there. But I think, John, getting back to your point about the significance of this, you know, when you look at the playoff rankings, Ohio State being 5th, one of the largest fan bases in the country, you know, you got Alabama at 6th, one of the largest fan bases in America. You know, you look at last year's Big 12 championship of Baylor, Oklahoma State, and I don't remember what the TV ratings were, but it didn't necessarily have playoff implications. Oklahoma State, if they won, had a small chance to sneak in, but it was unlikely still. You know, this one has playoff implications. So Ohio State fans, Alabama fans, they're going to be glued to their TV hoping for TCU to lose, rooting for K-State. And K-State being really the lone championship game at that 11 a.m. kickoff time, other than, you know, my MAC conference, which used to be on Friday night, there's no competition. It's the College Game Day game. It's the number one crew. It is a huge opportunity to shine a spotlight on the Kansas State program, build the brand. The TV rating should be insane for this game. So I think it's a monumental opportunity to do that. And, you know, I look at the Sugar Bowl the same way. You know, you're going to have a real opportunity to have back-to-back games with major ratings because of the opponent you're playing or the impact of the game.
Well, getting back into last week, the Kansas City Chiefs won against the Los Angeles Rams and wasn't exactly the prettiest game, but they did it. And Travis Kelce had a touchdown. Again, Travis Kelce in a 10 touchdown is one of the best bets I will take every single week. But on the breakdown this week, Matt Cassel talks about the offensive play where Travis Kelce got the touchdown and what worked well for him and how that big man could just find the end zone.
It really is remarkable. And we noticed as we were talking about this play before the show, getting ready, we noticed something. It was funny. I didn't happen to notice as I was putting this together. But we noticed as we were talking through it, you'll see, you could see it best from the sideline angle as Kelce, you know, breaks into the open field, you'll see Isaiah Pacheco kind of stay in pitch phase behind him. And Kelce thinks about it. He almost pitches this ball over to Pacheco. And he probably would have scored if he did it, but it's probably safer that Kelce held on to it and did it himself. But it's just funny, like, the creativity that extends to these players, too, when they get the ball in the open field. Watch this as Kelce makes this move, and Pacheco, he spots Pacheco.
Oh, no. I thought he was going to lateral it. I mean, and you'll even see it just in this angle right here. You really don't understand it until you watch it for a few times. But after he makes this catch right here, this defender's coming up for him and gives him a little, oh, nope. And then arm tackle, sorry, into the end zone. It's a thing of beauty right here. I mean, that guy is special.
Can you imagine how that building would have exploded if he pitched that ball?
Oh, my gosh. That would have been a really long pitch, too. I mean, I would have given him a lot of credit, and that would have took a lot of brass in order to do that.
Yeah, and it's probably for the best. We've seen the one area we've seen Kelce have some issues in the past or when he has to pitch that ball or throw it downfield. It hasn't always gone well, but
yeah, just keep the ball in your hands, big fella. That's all you need to do because you're good enough as it is.
Now, looking ahead for this week, Kansas City Chiefs are taking on the Cincinnati Bengals in a rematch of last year's AFC Championship game. And the Bengals always just seem to play the Chiefs well. And on Outside the Trenches this week, BJ, Nick, and Tucker talked about the Chiefs offense, but not the one that we just broke down, the running game, and how Isaiah Pacheco could really make an impact in this rematch. And the Chiefs running game could really make an impact. So maybe it's a different type of game than what we're used to by the Chiefs. Maybe that the running game is what's going to defeat the Bengals. But on Outside the Trenches, they talked about just that and how this really is a key factor in winning this game.
As far as like them turning the screws and locking the doors on the game. So it's good to see the Chiefs have established a run game this year versus Cincinnati. And and honestly, I think this Kansas City team has really turned a corner since Mahomes has decided to run the ball more effectively from the QB, because teams weren't respecting that this year from him.
Well, when you look at the stats from last year, Tucker, I'll jump in here real quick and then we'll get into our blind nil segments. But, you know, one of the areas when you look at the games last year, I'm going to bring up the stats right now to make sure I get them right. But the Chiefs were able to run the ball actually pretty effectively against the Bengals in both those games. At least when you look at the box score at the end of the game, I don't think there were a bunch of, or a handful of like, you know, single runs that kind of skewed the numbers. But I know in the first matchup, as I bring it up here, the Chiefs were able to 24 carries for 139 yards in that first matchup. In that week 17 matchup they lost. Then Jerick McKinnon had 12 carries for 65 yards in that game. And then in the other one, that was the playoff game. In the other game, in the playoffs, they were able to run for 155 yards with Darrell Williams carrying it 14 times for 88 yards with a 6.3 yards per carry average. I mean, they averaged over 6 yards a carry in those two games, over 250 yards rushing combined in those games. So they're actually finding success there. But this is talked about with Brett Coleman this week. The chess match the Chiefs have kind of been dealing with all year is how are teams schematically going to play against them? Because what the Bengals had done is what we started to see with Tyreek Hill. A lot of teams do drop eight. Don't let Patrick Mahomes put a spy on him. Don't let him scramble and then make them chip away down the field. Well, this year teams are playing a whole lot more man because Tyreek Hill isn't on the field anymore. They're not terrified to play man defense. Well, what are the Bengals going to do? Because this team is set up better to beat all different types of coverages than they were in the years past. We've seen them beat man. We've seen them beat zone with Juju and MVS and all these guys being on the same page of where to go against zone coverage. How are the Bengals, who had success against Patrick Mahomes? We just said worst second half or worst half of football we've seen from Mahomes. A lot of dropping eight. I don't think they can get away with that this year, the way that the Chiefs offense is built. So again, what is that chess match of how are the Bengals going to go up against this particular group of offensive skill guys for the Chiefs?
Well, I think it's really interesting too, when you start to look at the rushing numbers, BJ, you saying that made me bring this up. You look at the last three games, 117 rush yards, 163 rushing yards, 155. It's 77 against the Titans, but then 112 against the Niners. And then that Niners game is when Pacheco was named the starter. So you're seeing a lot of good things happen in the rushing game. And I think that's what, five games there. And you're averaging about 124, about almost 125 yards per game when it comes to running the ball. So seeing some improvement there, and I'm excited to see what they can do on the ground.
Well, a big game for the Chiefs indeed, but another big deal at Kansas City Sports Network. We have no other pod now joining Kansas City Sports Network to talk everything soccer in Kansas City. And Dan Kuser, Chris Wright sat down with Jenna Weinbrenner to talk about soccer in Kansas City and how, you know, she grew up playing and kind of tells her story. And it's a really good show. It is, if you like soccer in the Kansas City area, we have you covered. We have three shows now, Soccer Talks currently and No Other Pod. And on No Other Pod this week, those three sat down to talk about Jenna's experience and what it's like playing in Kansas City.
Yeah, I think when I was still in college and they were back from Utah for the first season, it was really exciting. Just hoping that they would stay here when my time came to enter my name into the draft. And then hearing my name called during the draft to come back home to Kansas City was something incredibly special that I don't think I'll ever forget. To be able to come home and play in front of friends and family again, and family, older grandparents that aren't able to travel to games, is just something that is really hard to put into words. And I think it's really a special moment that not a lot of people get to live through.
Absolutely. I mean, it leads kind of leads right back into what we have written down here. We do make a little bit of an outline on this show.
We kind of
just wing it. But, you know, we're as NWSL fans, you know, we don't really get a good look into the draft process. It's not exactly, you know, in the media all over the place. Right. But can you walk us through your draft day experience, like beat for beat? I mean, did you know if Casey Current were interested in you? Were you surprised? What kind of emotions surrounded that day?
Yeah, I think that day was a roller coaster of emotions. I was able to be home with my family. We had a few friends over. My parents got some, you know, decorated cookies and food. It was a long process. The draft, I think, was like 5 hours long or something like that. And I was in a master's class that was only 7 days long. So I was missing. I had to tell my professor that I wasn't going to be in class for the one, like I was missing one of 7 days that the class was going on. So in the back of my head, like I was like, oh my gosh, I have so much work that I need to do before tomorrow. But yeah, it was a long, long day full of emotions, I would say. You know, everyone was just kind of anxious, waiting. And they take a very long time on the draft, I would say. Like they like to talk about every single pick. And when you're just waiting, not knowing if your name's going to get called, the tension starts to rise, I think. I was picked in the fourth round, so that was the last round. And I think by then it was just kind of a sense of relief. I hadn't talked to Kansas City myself, but I knew that my coaches were in contact with them. And I knew the staff at the time. I've grown up here, so I knew that they knew of me and that my name was in the pickings. But I wasn't sure if they were going to pick me or if I was going to come home. So to hear my name and have friends and family there was a really special moment.
Hey, I got to tell you guys about our friends at Liquid Death. And by now, you guys already know that you might see some strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is the water called Liquid Death? Say it with me. It'll brutally murder your thirst. And their infinitely recycled tall boy cans are here helping to bring death to plastic bottles as well. They also donate 10% of their profits from every can sold to kill plastic pollution. I've got the severed lime flavor with me here. I also love the berry flavor. And also, just the straight still water is incredible. I like drinking the water out of the can. It makes you feel powerful, makes you feel authoritative. So here's what you got to do. Go to liquiddeath.com/KCSN to find their store locator tool, or you can go get Liquid Death at your local Target, Walmart, or 7-Eleven. Go check them out at liquiddeath.com/KCSN.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, as we transition into bowl season for college football, it is also transfer season, and the transfer portal will open Monday. But who from Mizzou is going to transfer, and what is the Tigers' future team going to look like? On Mizzou, that's who Tucker, Dave, and Maggie sat down to talk about just that and how, unfortunately, some of the transfers, the Tigers look worse than they did. But maybe they'll have some new rookies next year that are great. They sat down to talk about that, analyze the moves, and who they think is going to transfer, maybe who could potentially transfer to Mizzou. We don't know. But it is Monday that the transfer portal opens, and there is going to be a lot of movement, it seems, in college football.
Before we completely, totally move away from Dom Lovett, there is still a chance, right? He can enter the transfer portal, but he can also return. Right, Gabe, that's what I was going to ask you. What do you think that chance is?
Very small. Not impossible, but I think the decision has been made. Okay. You know, and I think it will be elsewhere.
I don't think Mizzou can offer him what he wants. I mean, if the rumors to what I've heard are correct, I don't think that Mizzou can offer him what he wants. But I mean, I don't know. I don't sit in on those meetings.
I think they could. I think Missouri could find a guy to write that check. Yeah. At some point, you have to decide if you should. Mm. You know, I mean, but I think they could. But I don't know if that would necessarily keep him here.
That's the next thing I kind of want to ask about is kind of the on-field ramifications of this. Is this like a catastrophic thing? Because to me, on the field, this isn't like losing a Tyler Beatty who had 37% of your offense last season. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I looked it up. Dom had 31% of Missouri or 33% of Missouri's receiving yards. And I think 27% of their catches, some 30% of their catches, somewhere in that range, whatever. He had the second highest percentage of yards and the third highest percentage of catches of anybody in the SEC. The only more valuable receiver in the SEC was Will Shepard at Vanderbilt. Now, the flip side of that is Missouri's passing game still wasn't very good. He only had 3 touchdowns. And I think Luther Burden will now play the position he played this year. I think Luther will go into the slot, and I think Luther will have better numbers next year than Dominic had this year. The question is if they have somebody who has better numbers at Luther's spot than Luther had this year, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and we still have great guys in the room. I mean, when I was thinking that Dom was staying, I was looking at it like, next year we probably have one of the best wide receiver rooms in the country, like without tight ends, because I would say Georgia's pretty much up there with tight ends. But I would say we have one of the tops. I mean, you look at Dom Lovett and Luther Burden, who alone are, you know, very talented. I like what I've seen from Makai Miller. I mean, he kind of almost won us that game on Friday. You still have Mookie Cooper. You possibly have Chance Looper back. I mean, I still like what we see even without Dom. I wish we had Dom. I'm not going to say that I'm glad he's gone, but it doesn't hit me as hard as maybe losing like Sam Hornwood.
I don't think it's the end of the world is basically what I was just trying to say. I don't know.
Doesn't have to be, but I don't think there's a world you can say Missouri isn't worse today than it was 2 days ago.
I think that's fair. I think
there are worse. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, with transfer portal here, that means it is college football bowl season. And on Booth Review this week, Kent Swanson sat down to talk to Nick Schwert about the Kansas Jayhawks and they're going bowling. And also to talk about a little Heisman voting as well. It's postseason college football right on the corner. And it is just a great time. December college football, big deal. But the Jayhawks are playing in December. So that is definitely very cool. No one really thought that would happen this year, but they are going bowling. And Kent and Nick sat down to talk about Heisman, bowling, what bowl game they're going to go to, and what it's going to look like for the Jayhawks in a bowl game in December.
Yeah, dude. The first thing I need to know is, does Jalen Daniels get the Heisman vote that I just learned that you possess? So is Jalen Daniels getting it?
You know, what's so funny is before the season began, I was doing a different podcast and a buddy of mine asked me, he goes, what would Jalen Daniels need to do to be in Heisman, to get an invite to New York to get one of your Heisman votes. And I said, okay, well, he would need to throw for 28 touchdowns, give me 8 rushing, 6 or less interceptions, and KU needs to win 8 games. And through 5 weeks, I was like, oh my God, he might end up getting one of my votes. But at that point, it wasn't even like, I'm nervous, I'm going to have to vote for him. It was legitimately, he might be one of the 5 best players in college football. We know what happened from there, but it's disappointing because I was like, this is real. Like, through, he's one of the best players in college football. And it wasn't just a feel good, cute story. This kid from Kansas is sort of having a nice little season. By a lot of metrics, he was one of the best players in football, and it's unfortunate the way things panned out. But I mean, still, even with all the time he missed, an incredible season from him.
Oh man, it's been so fun to watch his growth, his progression, and I feel like the last 2 weeks we still haven't seen the full version of Jalen Daniels either. No. Like, it was impressive that he came back from the injury, and he looked night and day better this past week against Kansas State than he did against Texas. But we still didn't get to see the guy that we saw the first 5 weeks of the season, I don't think.
No, I don't know if it's as much a confidence level, but you don't play football for a month and a half. You can't expect a guy to hit the ground running. And then you account for the fact it's not just an injury, it's a separated shoulder in his throwing shoulder. So to think that he's going to be able to come back, have his full range of motion, and also trying to knock that rust off, you're right, he's not the same guy. I would be interested to see now, knowing that he's going to have virtually 3 to 4 weeks off before playing an actual football game again. I'll be real interested to see what he looks like in a bowl game, assuming that KU's playing, you know, at the end of December.
Well, we have a big week this week for Kansas City Sports Network. And on One-on-One this week, Jeff Allen and Mike DeVito sat down to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. And actually, the Kansas City Chiefs, the rest of the season, their schedule. And they have the easiest strength of schedule the rest of the year. And this Bengals is kind of the last hurdle they really have to get over right now to prepare for postseason and to get their confidence back. This last game against the Rams, it just wasn't pretty. And they just needed to work on some stuff. But hopefully they come out against the Bengals and it's one cohesive team. They have 3 games on the road, the Chiefs do. And that's a tough stretch. But on One-on-One this week, the guys talked about what they will need to do to defeat the Bengals and really win out the rest of the season.
I think that, oh, and Jordan just shot this to me. He said Kansas City has the easiest strength of schedule left in the NFL. That's scary.
That's great.
That is a scary thought. So then this obviously is the toughest team on the block. You know, I remember 2013. Remember when we lost to the Colts in that wild card game?
Yeah.
That was killer. And I remember, I don't necessarily think of it as a revenge game, but I remember being incredibly motivated to get back to that next season because I wanted to right that wrong and get things going. Talk to me about revenge games in general, brother. Are these a thing? Like, do you think Kansas City, a lot of those guys were there last year, do they're thinking about this as, hey, we got to get back and make this one right from last year?
Without a doubt. Coaches, players, the entire staff, everybody, support. Yeah. Anybody in that Chiefs building, they want to win this game. They want to win it bad. And they don't want to just win it. They want to make a statement, especially the way that we lost them during the regular season with the intent of, you know, winning the AFC Championship game and playoffs and coming up short again for no other reason than us making mistakes.
Right.
It was our own fault. We kind of had a meltdown there offensively. And I know this entire offseason they were motivated by that loss. And it's kind of propelled them to this record that they have now. And they get the opportunity to play the same team that kicked them out the playoffs. So, and it's along the path to getting that number one seed. So there's a lot of importance to this game because the Bengals are hot right now. They look like a really good football team. They started out 0-2. They've won, you know, 7 of the last 9 or something like that. Joe Burrow looks really good. The offensive line is protecting really well. Their weapons are doing really well. Jamar Chase is healthy. I think Joe Mixon's going to be back. So it's going to be a test. But I think, and I always think, no one's going to beat the Chiefs but the Chiefs.
Yeah, right.
It's up to us executing. We're not only the best team on paper. I just think we have the best mindset right now. You can see that Rams game. I mean, we kind of blew by it through this podcast. Nobody really cares. I mean, they feel like they lost that game. Right. That's one of those games where you're fortunate enough to get the win, but there's a lot to learn from it. So I'm excited to see what they do this week against a really good football team, and especially with what happened last year.
Yeah, that's a dangerous perspective. I didn't even think of that element. But not only you have this idea of a revenge game, but you have this team looking at last week like a loss, right? So this is also a bounce back, get back on track game. So those are that's a couple extra motivating things going into this. You do have to worry, though, and one thing I didn't think about that you brought up, I mean, I always am worried about a team that starts 0-2 and is able to put together a 7-4. Right? I mean, starting over 0-2 is devastating. You know, I mean, I don't know what the percentages are, but the percentages of making the playoffs drop to like
single digit.
Yeah, 0-2 start. So to bounce back to be 7-4 to get things right, you know, this is a resilient team too. So this is not one of those games that you can come out and just start flat, because these guys are, you know, these guys can play and they'll hop up and make you pay for your mistakes. So got to come out 100 miles an hour. But we know we're going to do that, Big Jeff. Any other thoughts going into this game before we head out? I mean, any sort of – what are you looking for? Anything specific? I mean, obviously Burrow's the guy, right?
Burrow's the guy. I think defensively we just got to keep him off schedule. He's right. A pocket guy, but he does have mobility.
Well, Burrow is the guy, and he actually has had a really good career so far. You know, he's not Patrick Mahomes, but Burrow is living up to his hype. And – the Kansas City Chiefs will take him on Sunday, but KC Lab sat down this week and Matt Lane is not happy about how the Kansas City Chiefs are making this game against the Bengals a Super Bowl when it should not be. And yes, this is a big game for the Chiefs. It's a revenge game, but it should just be any other game. The Chiefs have the one seed. They should be able to maintain that. It's kind of in their own hands right now. KC Lab, Craig, Kent, and Matt sat down to talk about this game specifically and why rising to that hype isn't necessarily the best thing for the Chiefs to do right now.
The offense has not said a ton. What do you... What timeout? What... What,
Craig, you weren't here earlier this week. Kent tried to end the show before we talked defense. He actively tried to get us out of the show before a single word was uttered about the defense. Can you believe this?
Almost had it. I did.
Maddie, I can't wait for our next podcast where we're just going to talk trash about Kent the entire time and forget his name. Just call him by the wrong number and just talk trash about him the entire time.
I forgot this happened. I had to make sure we talked about it. And we didn't really intro Craig. I asked him a question. He threw it back to me. Then we just skipped over it. Look, so I wanted to bring Craig back in. But yeah, you know, Kent tried to just skip right on over the defense. It was, something.
Everyone knows who Craig is because Craig is great.
No.
We're going to start the offensive side of the football, though. And like, I know the defense has been the ones talking. And like, I know that's where the quotes have come from. The bear being poked, or the Bengal being poked, if you will. But I think controlling emotions on the offensive side of the football is probably the most important side to be managing this. Like, I think it's to the point where this should be a storyline for this football game. It is one of the three that we're going to be doing on the offensive side of the ball. Because that was an emotional ending. That was an emotional half of football. I mean, I think the Chiefs played with that with some emotions in the second half. But the emotions were, don't screw this up. Don't blow it. There was timidity. It was some fear. It was a lot of things. It was chaos. And so I think, you know, there's some emotions that they're going to have to fight themselves of trying to do too much of, you know, trying to exercise some demons from what happened in the second half of that game. So I actually think Matthew, like, the side of the football that probably needs to control their emotions the most is actually offense.
I'm glad we're starting with this point. Yes, the offense absolutely does. I think this goes to both sides. So I think this is like the perfect kind of jumping off point here. The Chiefs seem really amped for this game.
like really amped and beyond players, beyond even Andy Reid almost giving a little bit of a nod to like, hey, this game's coming up. Like that kind of lets you know the level of big it is that even Andy kind of chimed in on it a little earlier and in a way that says, this is a big game that's coming up. You have, you know, trainers from players talking about it. You have a player that wasn't here talking about it. Like this is something. This is here. This is mattering to this team a lot. And you know what? I don't like it. I don't like that the Kansas City Chiefs, who have hosted four straight AFC championship games that went to back-to-back Super Bowls, that should have gone to another, credit to the Bengals for winning that game, but that should have gone to another, are making a non-Super Bowl game out of a, or making a Super Bowl out of a non-Super Bowl game. I do not like that. That is for other teams to do to the Chiefs right now. That is not something that I want to see the Chiefs doing. I don't like the Chiefs doing that.
Well, hopefully this is not the Super Bowl for the Chiefs because they will be at it in Arizona this year. So we got to defeat the Bengals, get over this little mini Super Bowl, whatever people are calling it, and they can move on to go to the postseason, keep the one seed, and just win out to have that nice bye in the postseason as they make another run for the Super Bowl. We all would love to see that. I would love to see them in Arizona in February. But we have a ton of stuff this weekend. We have Kansas State in the Big 12 Championship. Transfer portal is Monday. There's just a lot going on right now in Kansas City sports. But I will catch you up every single week right here on the Best Right Thing presented by Charlie Hustle.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.